your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn, May 10th already. Wow. Wow. We have Mother's Day weekend coming up. And by the time we get through the weekend and into the start of next week, it's going to be the middle of May. Wow. In fact, this coming Monday, 2 weeks until Memorial Day, if you really want to be scared. The month of May just flies by. And for a lot of folks, it's their favorite month because it's when spring really bursts forth. And it certainly has here in our area in the past week especially. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be talking about ticks. I know it's not pleasant, but it's a fact of life now here in our area. And the problem seems to be getting worse. We're going to be talking with a professor of biology at Grove City College. Her name is Dr. Tracy Ferrone, and she has just completed a study, and they've written, I don't know, two or three papers, I believe, on ticks. The incidence of ticks, the various kinds of ticks here in western Pennsylvania, they collected thousands of them. And now I understand that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, headquartered down in Atlanta, they're very interested in this study done by Professor Ferrone. And so they've been in contact with her, too. We'll talk to her about that. Ticks. There's more than one kind. It gets even scarier than that, too. And they carry more than Lyme disease. So we'll be talking with her in just a couple of minutes. Later, she's in Grove City. We'll be chatting with her by telephone at the college. Coming up later on the program today, the president of Butler County Community College stops in for a visit. And that's Dr. Nick Newpower, of course, who will be with us along about 1 o'clock or so today. I do want to give you a program note coming up on tomorrow's program, tomorrow's It's Your Turn program. We are going to be chatting with Rachel Slade about her research into a tragic story, the sinking of the cargo ship El Faro. Now, this happened two or three years ago, something like that. Ship went down, loaded with cargo. I think it was headed for Puerto Rico out of Florida. And it went down in a hurricane in the Bermuda Triangle, which adds another factor to it, of course, Bermuda Triangle. But the question that intrigued Rachel Slade was, how could, in today's day and age, you know, with advanced radio communication, radar, GPS, global positioning, how could a fully loaded cargo ship sail right into the teeth of a hurricane? Well, she explores this in some depth, and we'll talk to her about it tomorrow. It's a tragic story. There were more than 30 people who died when this ship went down. I don't know whether they ever found it or not. I know it was a very deep water. But she'll be with us tomorrow. We'll talk with her on tomorrow's program. Also tomorrow, we're scheduled to do, we've been making the rounds of golf courses in the area over the past couple of weeks with finally the spring weather here. And we're scheduled to talk tomorrow with Johnny Aubrey from Aubrey's Dubs Dread Golf Course. He's not only a teacher and a golf course owner, but a darn good player as well. He's done very well on the Tri-State PGA circuit over the last several years. So just a couple of program notes for tomorrow. Okay, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll be hooking up by telephone with Dr. Ferrone up at Grove City College. One of our sponsors on the program today, Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Open Monday through Friday, by the way. Monday through Friday at Gone Postal. They package your items for shipping. They make it very convenient for you. You don't have to worry about finding the right size box or the bubble wrap or any of that stuff. Just take your items up there, and they'll package them for shipping, either U.S. Postal Service or FedEx or UPS, however you want to do it. They're located at 140 Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's just off Newcastle Road there in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. Follow the signs, and bada-bing, bada-bing, you're at Going Postal Butler. They also have local honey. A lot of folks love honey. This is local. Really good. Here's a phone number you can call for more information, 724-841-0044. Open Monday through Friday. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Give us just a minute here, and we'll be in conversation with Dr. Tracy Ferrone at Grove City College.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. Pittsburgh destinations include downtown and the North Shore. Whether you're looking for a less expensive commute to work or wanting to visit the attractions of the Pittsburgh area, let the bus take you there. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Going to be talking about something very topical, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn, and that's ticks and the diseases that are carried by ticks. Our guest visits with us by telephone. She is a professor at the Grove City College, professor of biology, Dr. Tracy Ferrone. Dr. Ferrone, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
This problem with ticks seems to be growing exponentially year by year. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
It all started, as I understand it, when I was a kid, I played in the woods all the time. Never, I don't know whether I even saw a tick. I would have known one if I saw it.
Yes.
But with the advent of Lyme disease, everybody is now aware of ticks, eh?
That's correct. I think Lyme disease is finally starting to make the news and being taken seriously in Pennsylvania. However, we've had it for quite some time, and Lyme disease isn't the only disease that ticks carry. It's really just the beginning.
You, at Grove City College, you've undertaken some studies on the types of ticks and the diseases that they carry. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, over the past 5 years, myself and some colleagues and my students have been looking into Ixoides scapularis, which is the deer tick, commonly known as the deer tick in Pennsylvania. And it is also known to be a vector of a variety of different diseases, including Lyme disease. But there's also several other diseases, tick-borne fever, anaplasmosis, babesiosis, Bartonella. Those are things that probably most people haven't heard of, but are also carried by ticks. We also looked into a virus called Powassan virus that is a new emerging disease in Pennsylvania in humans, and we actually found some in our ticks that we collected.
Your study is being published or in the process of being published in a number of scientific journals. Is that correct?
That's correct. We actually had three papers come out. The first paper focused on our tick collection. We did a tick collection in conjunction with the Pennsylvania Game Commission and the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture and collected ticks from deer at hunter check stations throughout the state. And we looked at what ticks were coming off of those deer, and the first one was the Ixoides scapularis, the deer tick, but we also found another tick that was Dermacentor albopictus, which is known as the winter tick, which is interesting because there wasn't any other studies, at least ones that were published, that talked about the widespreadness of the winter tick. So we did publish that as kind of a sidelight. We weren't really planning on that, but sometimes research leads you into something that's interesting. So we noted that we found that tick in pretty good frequency. It was second to Ixoides, but we found it most commonly. It was certainly number two on the deer. Our second paper we actually published based on some diseases that we tested from the Ixoides ticks. And interestingly enough, we did test these ticks for Lyme disease. We did test them for anaplasmosis. We did test them for babesiosis, Bartonella. But We also tested them for a disease called Borrelia myomatoid. Now, I'm not sure that anyone's probably ever heard of that before, but Borrelia myomatoid is a cousin, if you will. It's in the same genus as Borrelia burgdorferi, which is Lyme disease. And we did find that at about the same frequency in these ticks as we did find with our Lyme disease. So we took that information and published it because it's relatively novel information. And then finally, our third paper was based on the Powassan virus.
We did find
evidence of that in our tick population.
How was it that you started on this study? Was this an idea that you had, or were you commissioned by somebody?
Actually, I had a relationship with another veterinarian and an MPH that works with the health department. He also works with the CDC, and he kind of came up with this idea. It was a cool idea, and he had worked with me before here at the college, and he says, hey, Trace, you want to take on this this project? The Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture is doing the CWD, which is chronic wasting disease testing on deer at the hunter check stations throughout the state. Maybe we could ask them to pull some ticks off of these deer while they're taking their samples for the chronic wasting disease. So I reached out to those folks, and you know what? They said, hey, we'd love to do that. So I ended up being the tick lady, where everyone was sending me packages of ticks throughout the state, and we did that for 3 years. And we utilized those ticks and sorted them and speciated them, and that's when the students really got involved, and we ended up testing them, doing genetic testing on them to find different disease agents.
So you had a team of students assisting you?
Correct.
How many?
There was up to, well, at any given time, there was 9 total students throughout the 3 or 4 years that we were working on the project.
How many ticks did you end up with in your collection there at Grove City College?
I am known for having a collection of about 3,000 ticks. So, that was a pretty good sample size.
Now, I understand that the Centers for Disease Control, that's the federal agency, got
correct
wind of your research, and they appear to be very, very interested.
That was true. We didn't plan on doing the Powassan virus study at all. But again, through my contact who had set things up, Enzo Campanolio, he had contacts with the CDC, and they heard of my 3,000 tick collection and said, hey, if you guys are done with those and you still have sample, could we maybe test them? And I said, sure, if that's what you'd like to do. So it was something that was probably going to be thrown away when we were done with it, but we found another way to utilize that information and get it into a helpful study.
Obviously, you're still able to test these ticks even though they're long dead?
Yes. Yeah, that was actually very important in the study. We didn't want any live ticks coming into the school. Potentially infecting anyone. We had to be careful in how we handle them. But you can still use extraction methods to get the DNA or the RNA, the genetic material that is associated with different agents through what's called PCR testing, get that out and identify it so we can see which ticks are carrying which diseases.
Could any of your team members actually contract some of these diseases by handling the dead ticks?
Well, we use precautions to do that. We certainly use some bio-level security. We use gloves. The ticks are dead and bathed in alcohol before we get them. And then we don't do any opening or splitting of the ticks. The students were just involved in speciating the ticks. We actually utilized a professional lab that would have broken up the ticks to get the DNA.
And you speciate them simply by looking at them? You can identify the ticks by their appearance?
Part of it was morphological, meaning we looked at them just under a microscope and used various keys to identify them. It was a little tricky at the beginning whenever we were getting used to the whole identification process, so it took some time, especially when we found a tick that wasn't on Pennsylvania Keys. So we ended up consulting with several other universities. Rhode Island was one of them. We sent a picture of our Dermacenter tick, the winter tick, that we weren't expecting to find, and they sent it back and said, hey, this is Dermacenter albopictus. What is that doing in Pennsylvania? So we knew we were onto something kind of interesting at that point. We also sent tick samples to the lab and had them genetically confirmed that we were identifying ticks appropriately morphologically. So we did it both ways.
Listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're talking by telephone with the professor of biology at Grove City College, Dr. Tracy Farrone. She has recently been involved in a number of studies looking at ticks and the diseases that they carry. Here in western Pennsylvania, we have a particularly high population of ticks, Dr. Farrone, or no?
We do. As far as tick population, there's been a few studies that have looked at every county and has found Ixodes scapularis, which is the deer tick, in every county in Pennsylvania. We also have, for the past, I believe since 2011 or so, have been the state with the number one Lyme disease cases reported in humans. So not what you want to be on the top of the list of for all the states in the union, but we win that one.
Is there any idea by researchers, and I know you weren't looking at this in particular, but any idea why the sudden increase in the tick population, as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, we never knew about ticks whenever we were kids.
Yeah, well, they've been around, but part of it has to do with the whole ecology and how the health of our environment and changes in our environment affect all the changes of the animals and the changes in vectors and disease. A lot of it has to do with urban development or spread, in that we're going into areas, wooded areas, where animals are, so there's just closer contact. Everyone wants to have the two-acre lot that's wooded, that used to be deer pasture or woods. So now we're playing in our backyards that are areas that always had a lot of wildlife, and the wildlife, deer, turkeys, act as perfect hosts for the ticks, and the ticks take advantage of that. And as the wildlife hosts perpetuate through the environment, and we just have that closer relationship, the ticks are able to move with them.
Is there any possibility that we could see a decrease? I'm thinking, and this may not be analogous at all, but 15-20 years ago, we had gypsy moth infestation all over western Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It was horrendous. I mean, there were people who put sticky paper around all of their trees. In fact, there were even neighborhoods where people banded together and contracted with a helicopter for spraying service. I mean, it was horrendous. And then all of a sudden, although we still have gypsy moths in some areas, all of a sudden the population decreased. I don't know. I heard that it was wasps or something that turned out to be a natural predator, and it all went away.
If we could find something like that, that would be wonderful. Unfortunately, ticks are extremely hardy in the environment, and this is one of the myths out there. Many people think they don't overwinter, but a typical tick life cycle, a deer tick life cycle, actually lasts for 2 to 3 years. So they live in the winter quite well. They go into the leaf litter and kind of lay low and hibernate for a bit of time. But, they overwinter. It can't get cold enough, you know, to knock out ticks. And that we've been seeing this kind of slow spread from the south. I mean, there's even some ticks. There's a tick called the Lone Star tick that you can guess where that kind of originated from, that we're now seeing moving up into the northern areas, even as far north as Pennsylvania. So there's been some changes. We talk a lot, I teach a class in zoonotic diseases and public health, and we talk a lot about how the interactions between humans and the environment and animals are all related. And, you know, as we've tried to everybody loves trees, and I love trees too, and in the forest, and we've really brought back a lot of the deciduous forest, and we're living amongst it now. There was a lot of deforestation that occurred in the 1800s and early 1900s, but we've brought back a lot of that environment now. But it's in our suburbs, it's in our neighborhoods, and the deer are living there with us, and the deer are thriving. Everybody wants to have those cute little deer in their backyard, or the turkeys, and then they bring their ticks and all the kids and the dogs. The dog is out playing in the yard, coming in the house, you know, so we get exposed.
So, yeah, our pets, even though it's commonly known as the deer tick, our pets can pick these up very, very easily.
Absolutely.
And I guess they don't even have to be in high grass or in the woods. I mean, they can actually pick it up in the backyard.
Yeah. It does help to avoid the areas where there is high grass or right along a tree line. The ticks do like to kind of hide in a shaded area right along the tree line where trees and high grass come together. So if you walk through that, that's where they tend to be waiting for you. But we do see our animals bringing them in, and it can be very difficult to see them. You know, as a veterinarian in clinical practice, and I know what you're talking about when you said, I used to never see ticks before, and now I'm going to age myself, but when I first started clinical practice, we never saw ticks on cats. And the reason why, largely, is because cats are such good groomers. Mm-hmm. But in my latter years of practice, we started to see a lot of ticks coming on the cats now. And the reason is there's just so many, they're overwhelmed.
So what can we humans, do to try to avoid trouble with ticks?
Yes, well, you know, going off from talking about our animals, you definitely should keep them on a flea and tick control. And notice I say control. The ticks are hard to kill. There's not a really good arachnocide that is 100% effective against killing ticks, but we can have some of the better ones are about 80% effective or so, but it's certainly better than nothing, keeping them on something. And also checking your animal after they've been outside, and then checking yourself and checking your children. One thing that is also a myth is that people believe that they can only be infected from an adult tick, and that's what we're used to seeing is an adult tick, which is relatively easy to see with the naked eye, that's engorged or attached or biting, and we think that's how we get exposed. In actuality, ticks have four different life stages. They have an egg, a larva, a nymph stage, and then an adult stage. Well, that nymph stage is about the size of a period on a printed page 12 font, and those nymphs can get on you, and you may not be able to see them very well unless you really, really look. But those guys can bite you. The bite is painless, and they can transmit diseases. So we really have to be aware if you go out into the woods and you're exposed or out in the yard or long grass that you're checking yourself for anything unusual, taking a shower after you come back in, wearing some long pants if you're going out on a hike. I know that's not always practical. Spraying yourself with some DEET or other insecticide that has some efficacy against ticks can be helpful as well.
Boy, I don't know. A lot of folks are worried about using too much of that DEET as well, you know, spraying chemicals on yourself.
Sure. Well, 25% is usually, you don't have to go up with high percentages. But if you can go with 25%, that's usually effective.
So what are some of the symptoms of Lyme disease if you do happen to be infected by a tick?
That's a good question. There's actually, and this is the good news, I'll tell you some good news here. Many of us have probably already been exposed. If you've lived in western Pennsylvania for more than 5 minutes and been out in the woods, there's a good chance you may have already been exposed and have no idea. Most of us that get exposed, our immune systems, God bless it, it's good, and it fights it off, and we don't even know that we've been exposed and we don't get sick. The other thing that can happen, the second thing that can happen, is we develop flu-like symptoms. So we get a fever, kind of don't feel good, and maybe or maybe not, you go to the doctor. And those can pass. There can also be a bullseye rash, what's called a bullseye rash, associated with that acute stage. And there's a myth with that as well. Many people think that if you get the bullseye rash, that's diagnostic for Lyme disease. And while it's certainly a symptom, a bullseye rash around the bite site could appear, or it could not appear with Lyme disease, and it could also appear with other things. So people and physicians need to be aware of that. It's not 100% diagnostic. It's certainly associated, but you don't have to have that to have Lyme disease or even suspect it. But you certainly could put tick bite on your differential list and all of the other things that could be indicated. The third thing that happens with Lyme disease is that it becomes more of a chronic issue. You get past that acute stage, and it becomes more of a chronic issue, and it can affect different parts of your body. The Lyme disease is a bacteria that's shaped like a corkscrew, and it goes through your body, and it can land in different organ systems, including your heart, your kidneys, and most commonly your joints. And then you can have chronic problems that may come up after that.
Oh, great. Wow. is there medical treatment that is effective?
There is. And this is where we probably need some more education out there in that if you treat the disease with doxycycline, which is an antibiotic, relatively quickly after exposure, there's a pretty good chance that you can clear the infection or help the body clear the infection. What becomes a problem is if you wait and you don't seek medical care or don't get proper medical care, and the symptoms develop into something that's more chronic. Once it gets into the chronic stage, it can be more difficult and require more intensive medical treatment to recover from.
Are researchers working on some sort of a vaccine, you know, that sometime we could get a shot?
That's a wonderful question. As a veterinarian, we have a vaccine in dogs. We vaccinate our canines for Lyme disease, and that's certainly something you can do if you have a canine. But the Lyme vaccine for humans, as far as I know, is still in development. I believe maybe even a few decades ago, they came out with a vaccine, and it wasn't very effective, and they took it off the market, if I'm remembering correctly. But someone should be working on it somewhere. I don't have the latest on that. Maybe it's coming out, but I haven't heard.
Boy, it's tough, folks. You know, you want to do the right thing, but here we are coming into the hot weather season now, and kind of tough to go outside wearing long sleeves and tucking your long pants into your boots and all that kind of. Who wants to do that all summer long?
Yes. Well, again, I would just recommend being aware. You know, I wouldn't say that everybody has to live in a bubble and be afraid. You know, these have been around for a while. It's just that our awareness is getting more as the ticks are getting more and we're getting more exposed. But you know, I think many of us, if they would take antibodies on us, we'd probably have some immunity to some of this. So we can be thankful for healthy immune systems, but certainly people, especially people that have immunocompromised, should take further precautions than maybe your average healthy person. But it's something to be aware of, but if you take certain precautions and avoidance, it can be helpful.
Here's one final statistic, folks, to make you feel even worse. After mating, a female tick can lay anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 eggs.
That's correct.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
That explains how once they get into an area, they populate it.
So they just hang around on especially high grass or bushes, or you even said leaf litter.
They hide in the leaf litter, and I guess over winter that way mostly. But in the springtime, they come out, they're hungry, and they're looking for a blood meal, and that might be you. And they actually climb up on the top of a blade of grass, and they stick their little forelimbs, I guess, out and do something called questing. And they will stand on the top of that blade of grass until you walk by, and then they'll grab you, whether you're a dog or a cat or a person, and then they got you.
Listeners, thanks, Doctor. I really appreciate it. Very, very informative here, and something to know about. The more we know about this, the better we can prepare to hopefully avoid.
Dr. Tracy Farone, a professor of biology at Grove City College, is sharing some of the information from recent studies that she and several students have done with regard to ticks and the diseases that they carry. Thanks again, Doctor. Nice to talk with you today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sure. So long now.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
The big day is almost here. Your son or daughter is about to graduate high school. Once the festivities are over, it's time to start thinking about college and, more importantly, how to pay for it. That's why the Armco Credit Union is proud to offer a brand new scholarship program. They are giving away $5,000 in total scholarship funds to graduating seniors who are bound for full-time enrollment at a college, university, or trade school. To fill out an application, visit armcocu.com. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, listeners. Fascinating conversation with Dr. Farone there, Dr. Tracy Farone, professor of biology up at Grove City College. Kind of unsettling, all that information, scientific information about ticks. Hey, we're going to be chatting with the president of Butler County Community College next. Dr. Nick Neupower is with us here in the studio. Dr. Neupower, always good to see you. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. And also with us is Jess Matnock. She's the executive director of communications and marketing. Jess, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Was it raining when you guys came in, or did that just start?
Just started.
Getting a little brief downpour here.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had too much here in the city of Butler since about 4 o'clock this morning, when we had a pretty good thunderstorm roll through.
Yeah.
Northern part of Butler County got some more after that, but we've been kind of lucky so far. Well, we're going to be talking about what's happening at Butler County Community College, and we have a very busy week coming up. Actually, this is final exam week, right? Is that going on now, or is that already done?
Yeah, we're done with final exam.
That's done.
Yeah.
But commencement is next week. Am I right on that?
Yes, and you're also right that this is an incredibly busy period. A couple of days ago, we had a wonderful, what we called commencement ceremony for the Junior Leadership Butler County program, which was a class project of last year's Leadership Butler cohort. And there was a model that was developed to provide the youth of Butler County, the Butler County High Schools, I think the cohort was about 25 students or so, mm-hmm. an opportunity through the appropriate application process and collaboration with the Chamber, BC3, and Slippery Rock to offer a leadership class cohort for students in all the Butler High Schools. And we had a graduation a couple of nights ago, went incredibly well. These students each received a $500 scholarship to BC3. And SRU, assuming that they're accepted under SRU's normal application process, a $1,000 scholarship to Slippery Rock University. We had that graduation a couple of nights ago. Tonight we have nurses pinning, which is always a big deal. Even go back to last weekend, although I had to miss it with another commitment, we had our Hall of Fame, Mike Franco, was inducted.
Yes.
And then next week, we do have our Super Bowl, and that, of course, is graduation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a busy time, yeah. Actually, it's busy at a lot of schools, although I noticed some of the Pittsburgh universities, they've already had commencement some a week ago. I think Pitt was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Slippery Rock University is this weekend.
Yes.
And then BC3 will be next Wednesday.
That's correct.
Night. Hopefully it's not raining on that night.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, we'll see. Well, you're in the field house anyway, are you not? I mean, for the actual ceremonies?
The students process from Founders Hall to the field house. So they are outside for a brief period of time. Nurse is pinning tonight, though. It's in the suck-up feeder, so we're safe there.
Yes. See,
that's why mortar boards are those square things, just in case it's raining.
That's right.
Is that what those are for?
Keeps the rain off your face.
That's right.
I wonder where those ever came from, anyway.
Well, I'll tell you, they can be very dangerous. Fortunately, our students don't toss them up in the air, so they're more like Frisbees or boomerangs, but... it is neat to see at commencement, particularly with the faculty, with all of the different academic regalia. Mm-hmm. I think we shifted our 50th anniversary to a different color of blue for our students. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Maybe New York Mets type blue, not the dark Nittany Lion color. Mm-hmm. Of course, everything comes
kind
down
of a,
to...
Kind of a royal blue.
Yeah. Royal blue would be perfect. Mm-hmm. But what's really cool is the different faculty members and those who are on the stage, the different hoods and regalia that each is wearing, which ties back to where those individuals have earned their doctorate or their master's degrees. So that the caps are always interesting as well. And it really adds to that wonderful rite of passage. And you often talk about the pomp and circumstance. And we really play that up because it's a significant event in an individual's life.
Should be, yes. I would, if I had to take a guess, that whole concept of the regalia and the mortar boards and everything probably goes back to the United Kingdom and, you know, the early days of higher education there. Oxford and Cambridge and some of those places, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's very impressive, and it should be.
Yes.
It should be when the faculty comes in and their various colors and everything.
And this is a particularly significant commencement for us because it's our 50th. So we're celebrating 50 years of graduates. We have 578 that are planning to graduate, which is our second largest graduating class. It's just last year was our largest with mm-hmm. 585, so it's just under that at 578.
Well, that's significant for two reasons. First of all, obviously, 50th anniversary, and it was a couple of years ago when we celebrated the 50th anniversary
correct.
Of the founding of the school.
Right.
But that class, which would have started then,
correct.
It's 50 years since they graduated. The other thing that's significant is, you know, this big story a week or so ago now, I guess, maybe the beginning of last week, about the options put forth for how to deal with declining enrollment in the state system.
Yeah.
And only Slippery Rock and Westchester,
correct.
Among the 14 state universities, have shown even stable student population. Slippery Rock's been growing.
They
set a new record every year. But all the other schools are losing students, so... For Butler County Community College to be graduating its second largest class next week, that's significant, I think.
I really appreciate you bringing that up. And ironically, Jess and I were just talking about it. Our summer enrollment is down about 3% or so. However, we're taking our Cranberry location basically out of commission. We're renovating BC3 at Cranberry. And I should have known this and should have communicated better to the trustees, but our enrollment for the summer was down and down and down. And then again, when you analyze the numbers, we're down because we're not offering the number of classes at Cranberry. Other than that, our summer enrollment is incredibly strong. Now we know it's early, but our fall enrollment at this point is up 8%.
Wow.
And... Okay, that's 3 months away, but we have done some things internally. Jess's area, working with student affairs, enrollment management, communications, marketing, we've really shifted the way that we do things. And we would like to think that 75% of our students graduating debt-free are quality, and all of the news, not only in our main campus, but our different locations. I really think come fall that we will be talking about an enrollment increase. I might think that it might be significant. Mm. So at this event, this junior leadership event, I mentioned to those in attendance that I hope that you realize just how lucky Butler County is to have both BC3 and Slippery Rock University, two of the Commonwealth's 32 public institutions, are both within Butler County lines, and the success of each of the institutions. And as you pointed out, that RAND study of the state system, very interesting and incredibly telling.
Can we take a second? I know it's a bit parenthetical, but can we take a second and talk about that? Because that's significant for higher education. Maybe some folks didn't catch up on that news. Like I say, it was a week or two ago. I don't remember the exact time. But the RAND study, which was commissioned by the state.
That's correct.
The state system, the 14 universities, had done an earlier study, and there was some question about, you know, are they studying themselves?
Yeah.
Should we get more of an independent study? And this is Slippery Rock, Clarion, IUP, Edinburgh, CalU.
Correct.
And then all the rest in the central and eastern part of the state. And the RAND study came back with five options to try to remedy the situation, not only with declining enrollment, but financial instability. Yeah. A lot of these schools are deep in debt. And one option was not to do much. Keep the 14 schools, maybe lessen some of the state regulations about everybody has to have the same tuition and, you know, all that sort of thing. But the other four options, some of them were pretty severe. Close some of the schools, merge some of them. Something that I'd never heard before, have them come under the wing of some of the state-related
schools,
Penn State and Pitt.
That, to me, was the biggest surprise.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that before. I'm not quite sure. You know, the RAND study may suggest that. I don't know whether they've checked it out with Penn State and Pitt yet, whether they'd be interested in doing that.
Especially when the Penn States of the world have the Commonwealth campuses. So there were already over 20 or so. Wisconsin is a state where you have the mothership, the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and then the state universities are all University of Wisconsin at. At La Crosse is one that comes to mind, and there are a number. So it is not unusual to have that model. I was also surprised. I think that we're not alone. That was the biggest surprise coming out, that there could be mergers, but the fact that it would go under the state-related. Now, there are four state-related institutions. Lincoln, historically black college, university near Philadelphia, Pitt, Penn State, and Temple. I automatically went to Penn State and Pitt thinking that that would be the model, but perhaps Temple has a, you know, has a place here. Maybe it would have something to do with Temple being near Philadelphia, and, you know, Cheney has always been an interesting institution. Yeah. You have Penn State in the center of the state, and then you have Pitt on the western side of the state. So maybe geographically, if they would pursue that particular model. The other model would be, and do want to emphasize again to the listeners that Slippery Rock is a very strong university, I would say for a variety of reasons. But could it be that one of the stronger universities would then take over one of the other state universities, and where the savings would be, of course, is that you have one administration. You would be able to gain some efficiencies in terms of internal processes, purchasing, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the study. Community colleges were mentioned a couple of times. But again, Dave, it's you have a lot of this discussion that's going on, and community colleges are mentioned not in great detail, but I think it speaks to the model that exists for Pennsylvania's 14 community colleges. It's, in my opinion, it's all about local now. It's the decentralizing of public higher education, and the advantage that community colleges have is that they tie back to their local economy, their local environment. Now, we still come together to pursue statewide initiatives, but as the pendulum has gone, it's that local interest of the community colleges that has carried us.
Yeah, you know, this is not new, this declining enrollment. And by the way, folks, in the state system, some of these schools are down 30% in student enrollment. I mean, these are significant losses. The only thing that I had heard before as a possible solution was maybe having certain schools offer certain majors, and then other schools would not. For example, if you wanted to major in French,
yeah.
You could go to Slippery Rock, but not Clarion or Edinburgh, so they wouldn't have duplication of programs. That never seemed to go anywhere, and then this study came out a week or so ago, and wow, pretty much of a bombshell.
I tell you, and this is not to imply that we specifically or community colleges are without challenges. That would be stretching the point. It is the diversity in our offerings. Just think of a 401k or your investment portfolio. You don't want to have all your eggs in one investment. And so many of those universities are putting a lot of eggs in the 18 to 22-year-old basket. Think of what BC3 offers. Again, we're an institution of over 20,000. Okay, depending upon the year, it could get closer to 25,000. All of those early discussions and debates, et cetera, where we would be in 2018 if we hadn't had made those moves to be in Lawrence, Mercer, Armstrong, and Brockway. We have diversified our revenue stream. We offer courses to high school students, traditional age, non-traditional students. We have the academic, we have the workforce development, the lifelong learning, public safety.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have all of our eggs in one investment or one basket, and it's the diversity that I believe allows BC3 to succeed and community colleges as a whole. And heck, that's not even taking into consideration the record-breaking friend-making and fundraising that we've done at BC3.
And one other factor that you can't overlook whenever you're talking about this is the lower tuition rates, because we see more and more articles now, and not just in education papers, but in magazines and newspapers. Are colleges overpricing themselves? Are they pricing themselves out of existence? Obviously, a very competitive tuition rate at Butler County Community College.
We had so you'll be showing this at graduation with the trustees, 50 pull-out quotes from 50 of our graduates to celebrate the 50 years. Really shows a lot, great diversity in students' age, location, et cetera. How many of those students promoted in these pull quotes, "I'm graduating debt-free"? It had to be several to 10 celebrated the fact that they're either starting their lives or they're transferring debt-free.
I don't know an exact number, but I want to say there were more graduating debt-free than not graduating debt-free.
Yeah.
And we definitely have some diversity in our graduates, including the oldest graduate of all the community colleges is graduating from BC3. He's 80 years old. And he'll be graduating on Wednesday night. And he's the oldest graduate in our history.
We did a news story on that last week. He started at taking classes at Butler County Community College several years ago, 7 or 8 as I recall, and wanted to finish a degree that he started back in the 1950s. How about that? Isn't that terrific?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. Don Thomas is his name. And it's a great Butler connection. Mike Kelly will honor Don on the House floor on day of graduation on May 16th. I believe it's roughly 10 a.m., and it will be broadcast, if all goes well, on C-SPAN.
Mm.
And when I called Don yesterday to let him know this, he just could not believe it. So shout out to Mike Kelly, a Butler guy.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Jess, because that's we had some nice comments from him as well when we did the story about he just can't say enough about Butler County Community College. There's some real unsolicited testimonials there. Well, let's talk about the fall. Who wants to talk about the fall semester whenever we're just wrapping up the spring? I understand that there are several new courses that are going to be offered at BC3 come fall.
So we are incredibly excited about the fall, not particularly this year, that we want to wish summer away. So I already told you our enrollment numbers look really strong for the fall. We have a ways to go. Of course, we're expanding our nursing program to Brockway. Very excited about that. And Jess might be able to fill you in a little bit on an announcement that will take place later today a great collaboration between Seneca Valley High School and its outstanding leader, Dr. Tracy Vitale, and BC3 along with Point Park University.
BC3 is going to be offering courses this fall that bridge a collaboration between Seneca Valley High School and Seneca Valley Academy of Choice and Point Park University. So they're having that signing this afternoon. The Academy of Choice is a half-day program for students who want to learn dance. They have ballet, tap, jazz.
Oh.
So credits earned by those Seneca Valley Academy Choice students will articulate to Point Park University, and BC3 is helping that articulation happen. We were offering those classes. We're offering 11 courses, that will transfer as college credit to Point Park.
And these are not the dance classes that Paige and Meredith Newpower took many, many years ago. These are individuals who can make a career of dance. And Point Park, as you know,
well known for it,
very well
arts
known
program, whether it's music or theater or dance.
Yeah. Very well known. You know, the other growing population, so these academies are coming up, and it gives us an opportunity to partner, in this case, with Seneca Valley in offering college courses. So basically, these students will be taking college courses in a morning, and then from late morning till afternoon, they will be practicing their art. I mean, this is significant. I was surprised to learn about this when Tracy from Seneca had mentioned it to us. But another potential growing market that Jack Cohen is talking about, and I believe Seneca has some of this also, with the Lemieux Center, are these individuals who have a shot to make it big for hockey. So it would be a similar type model where we would offer college courses. They practice their art. And now talk about a game changer in terms of the Lemieux Center and the possibility of expansion there, et cetera. It's an amazing new model. It's so different than when we were in school, but it shows the forward thinking of Dr. Vitale working with BC3 and Point Park and the possibility to pursue other opportunities like the one I mentioned about hockey.
Yeah, and for people who aren't, and I'm not totally familiar with the system where you progress through hockey, but I know it's quite different from baseball, for example. There are, in Canada, there are a lot of junior leagues, but there are a lot of, especially in the United States, colleges who have outstanding hockey teams, and many of the professional players come from the college teams.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about it is, you know, in college basketball, you have the Final Four for the title. In college hockey, they have the Frozen Four.
That's right.
It's the last four teams. And it's not always big-name schools.
That's correct. Yeah,
it's places usually in Wisconsin or New Hampshire or somewhere
Minnesota,
like that. Yeah, Minnesota, that have had great hockey teams. So that's interesting.
Yeah,
to even think about that at the high school level. I'm impressed that Seneca Valley has an Academy of Choice where students who are thinking about, you know, making dance a career, they can start that in high school, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And
amazing.
Part of the articulation agreement is students who earn the BC3 credits, they are guaranteed an audition at Point Park. So that's part of the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But they can also transfer the credits into another program at Point Park.
So I realize they'll be announcing the details on this, but as I understand it, while they're still at Seneca Valley, we're still haven't graduated yet.
Still in high school,
they can take classes, college classes of BC3, and in the second half of the day, practice their craft.
That transfer to Point Park, and as you had mentioned earlier, you know, a lot more affordable to earn those credits through BC3 and then transfer them.
Absolutely. And the possibility of as many as 11 courses that could transfer?
Yeah.
That's correct.
That's big.
That's a lot of money, and it's my understanding that we'll not only do this in this program, but we will make these types of courses available, as many as 11, to Seneca Valley students as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And again, great credit to Dr. Vitale on our team, Dr. Richardson, Dr. Ola, and some others to make something like this possible.
We have enough classroom space on the main campus to, because some of these new cutting-edge programs are terrific, but I hope we have enough space to
well, we'll have the We'll have the Victor K. Phillips Nursing and Allied Health Building, so that will expand that particular program. We'll have some backfill opportunities. But remember, we're also offset by the fact that we have a thriving distance ed program, too. Mm. So students do mix and match, and our distance ed program has been as high as 1,000, 1,100 students. I think currently we have about 800 or 900 students. So it has freed up some space.
Take a quick break. Lots more to talk about in terms of what's happening at Butler County Community College. And we'll pick up our conversation with our guests in just a moment. I want to talk to you about the good folks at Schnoor's Greenhouse. This is the season for visiting greenhouses, especially over the next couple of days, because Mother's Day is coming up, Mother's Day weekend. And a hanging basket or a potted plant would be a terrific gift for Mom. Schnoor's Greenhouse off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. This is Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse. And when I say long time, I'm not just kidding around. Schnoor's Greenhouse is family owned and operated since 1889. It's not 1989, that's 1889. They specialize in annuals and hanging baskets, vegetable plants, tremendous selection from which to choose. Just about any flower plant you can name, they're going to have it. They have gift cards, too. Hours, Monday through Friday, 9 to 8, Saturday, 9 to 5, and Sunday, 11 to 5. Schnoor's Greenhouse off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. We'll be right back.
May is notoriously our area's strongest storm month, and with it comes the chance for downed power lines. Hello, I'm Matt Boshaw, CEO and General Manager of Central Electric Cooperative. If you encounter power lines on the ground or sagging low, stay away and warn others to do the same. Always contact 911. Remember, lines do not have to be sparking to be energized. If your vehicle comes in contact with a downed power line, remain in the vehicle and wait until the utility crew arrives to de-energize the line. Warn others to stay away. Only exit the vehicle in case of fire, jumping out and away from the car with both feet together and hop away for at least 30 feet. Telephone or cable wires may have come in contact with power lines, so remember to treat all downed wires as energized. This is Matt Boshaw with Central Electric Cooperative. Our tradition is to service, our responsibility is to safety. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Welcome back, folks. Dr. Nick Neupower is here, president of Butler County Community College, and fresh back from, you were out to the Midwest, right, to get an award.
Yes.
To be honored.
And I was honored.
Ah, you should be. It was quite a night. Maybe we can get Jess to talk about this. Dr. Neupower might feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Well, Dr. Neupower received the Shirley B. Gordon Award of Distinction for College Presidents, and that he was nominated by our Rho Phi chapter of Phi Theta Kappa, which is the International Honor Society that we have at BC3. So they nominated him for the award, and he received it. And he was on stage at the big convention. We saw some great photos. It looked like a big party.
Yeah.
And that's whenever he accepted the award officially.
Yes.
The Shirley B. Gordon Award of Distinction for College Presidents. And this, you were nominated by the local chapter, the BC3 chapter of Phi Theta Kappa. That's an honorary society.
Correct.
You need like a 5.0 grade point average to get into that or something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, that was nice, very nice. And some students went with you out there?
Yes. We had our co-advisors, Morgan Rosardi and Amanda Fleming, and we had three students. And there were about 5,000 individuals who were in attendance. I had never been to Kansas City before, so it wasn't – have you ever been to
– I have not. I've heard that everything's up to date there, though.
Yeah.
Everything's up to date in Kansas City. It's from Oklahoma, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And didn't really get to enjoy the barbecue all that much. It was kind of an in-and-out type deal, but I was really honored. What happens is that there are some big-hitter speakers that provide keynote sessions. And a couple of individuals, their names escape me right now, but who give these TED Talks. And one focused on leadership, and this is a quote that I've already stolen. I should probably attribute it to her, and I will in the future. But talking about leadership and these 5,000 individuals, the bulk of which are college or university college students. And her quote was that leadership does not corrupt, leadership reveals. And I thought that was an absolutely fascinating statement. Again, I've borrowed it more than a couple of times. So it's a nice blend of celebration, student awards, president awards, faculty awards, some big hitter keynote speakers. And then throughout the 3 or 4 days, there are breakout sessions for the students that could be personal financing, planning for your future, debt-free, a lot of leadership stuff. And these students have great opportunities to earn scholarships themselves. So it was time very well spent.
And our students, our chapter won a couple of awards as well.
That's correct.
They were recognized as a Middle States Gold Chapter, and they were awarded for Best Completion
Event. Yeah.
So that was an event that we held on campus for Completion Week.
Excellent. Yes. I understand some new deans are coming on board at Butler County. Maybe they're already on board. I don't know.
Yeah. So I'll jump with the larger view of this, then Jess can go over some of the changes. So at the college for a couple of years now, I've been talking about a reset. And with enrollment declines and sometimes struggles a couple years ago, struggles with the timing of our state funding, what have you, is that what I dubbed a reset opportunity would be that when people retire or leave the college, unless it's absolutely mission critical, we'll not fill those immediately. We will tie these new positions with the direction that relates to the strategic plan for the college. Mm-hmm. And frankly, in the process, we will save some money, and I've been very transparent about that. Jessica has been a great leader and a role model along these areas. Jess had been down at least a couple of people over the years. And then when we've gone forward with hiring these people over time, we can match them with the new direction from communications and marketing. President's Cabinet is an example. My time starting as President's Cabinet, we have two less vice presidents and one less executive director. So my number of President's Cabinet has declined, I think, by at least three in my time as president. So you have to walk the talk and you have to model that. It's gone over incredibly well, not only from a budgetary point of view, but also to bring people, new people in, but people who have been around a while, match their strengths with the direction of the strategic plan. And we have just recently announced a few of these reset changes.
So Steve Joseph is our Dean of Humanities and Social Sciences. Dr. Nicole Murray is the Associate Dean of Humanities and Social Sciences. And Martin Miller is the Dean of Library Services. And they all served in these roles as an interim. And then they've been moved to the permanent position.
And another change we just recently announced also, our Dean of Admissions, a fellow by the name of Bob Morris. Bob Morris did attend Robert Morris for his undergrad. That's not a joke. But Bob Morris is going to Juliet College, the first community college, 1901. And he has daughters that have moved to that area. So Bob just announced his departure. And what we ended up doing was taking our director of records and registration, and we moved Amy Pignator, who's fantastic, to a dean's position, and Amy will now oversee both admissions and records and registration.
Okay.
That provides a great example that we've given someone an opportunity internally. There are a lot of bumps to backfill those vacancies, what have you. Transparent, college is able to save money, but we're also able to take advantage of skill sets to match with the collaboration and the partnership in this era of strategic enrollment management. It's gone over very well.
For those of us who are not involved in education in general and certainly at the community college, it's kind of mind-boggling to realize how far ahead you have to plan these things, you know, in terms of new course offerings, resetting administrative responsibilities, you've got to be at least a couple of years ahead, or at least have an idea what you're going to be doing a couple of years from now.
So a big buzzword is succession planning, real big buzzword. And one of my colleagues from CCBC, Dr. Chris Reber, just announced 2 days ago that he will be leaving Community College of Beaver County to take over as president at Hudson Community College in New Jersey. Literally, you can see the Statue of Liberty from this community college. So now CCBC, like so many colleges and universities, have to figure out what's next. So we had a suggestion in our last Middle States visit that we should look into succession planning. And what it is that we've done is we've created our own Future Leadership Institute in partnership with Community College of Beaver County, Westmoreland County Community College, BC3. Jessica is the facilitator and the director of the program. And we put together a curriculum that matches competencies of the American Association of Community Colleges that match what future leaders need. And we have our second go-around of this program. We have a cohort of about 24 or so.
Correct, yeah, 24.
24 students. We meet at either Westmoreland, Beaver, or Butler, and our different off-campus locations. And it's remarkable that the speakers, they don't charge us anything. There are professional contacts where we reach out to these speakers to talk on subjects such as leadership, management, mission, vision, the politics of being a college president. They hear a lot from the college presidents. And we're taking this succession planning thing very seriously, not only with the reset, but this collaborative that's, I think, going pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the second year, I was actually a graduate of the first class. And the students, as Dr. Neupower shared, they go through a curriculum that matches those competencies set forth by the AACC, but they also have a capstone project that they work on at the end. So each school and their individual teams brings forth the project that ties in with their strategic initiatives and plans at their individual schools, and they present it to a team of judges, and somebody wins what we called the President's Cup from last year, and Team BC3 got the President's Cup last year, so we are very proud of that.
You can put that up there with being named the top community college in Pennsylvania for 2 years in a row, huh?
That is correct.
Take a quick break, back to talk more with our guests here on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn in just a moment. Hey, there's a business that I've been talking about. I don't know, have you heard about F&A Holloway? And I think this is especially important this time of year. This is a company that hauls away any junk that you have. So when you're getting out, you know, you look around the yard and, you know, winter damage or maybe that old shed that you've been wanting to get rid of for the last 5 years is finally starting to cave in. They'll demolish small buildings, small garages and sheds, haul away the debris. They'll haul away any junk that you have, furniture, appliances, electronics, which, of course, you can't put in the trash anymore, pianos. Fast and affordable. F&A Holloway. Here's the phone number. You can call them for more info, 724-496-9126, 724-496-9126. So let Wyatt and his team take care of all the moving and hauling for you. They'll haul away any junk that you have. Fast and affordable. F&A. F&A Holloway. Here's that phone number again, 724-496-9126.
At Osterling's Lawn and Garden, Pro Horsefly Wipes and Masks are 35% off for the month of May. Welcome birds and animals with insect houses, bat houses, hummingbird and oriole feeders, and bear and deer planters. Get your lawn in shape with grass seed, pelletized lime fertilizer, Bonide Weed and Feed and Fertrell Organic Lawn Fertilizer. Get planting with topsoil, potting soil, compost manure, annual flowers, and strawberry jars. Plus sweet onion plants while supplies last. You can find it all at Osterling's Lawn and Garden in Butler. Stop in and get your mom a hanging basket for Mother's Day.
Just joining us, that's fine. Dave Malarkey is my name. Dr. Nick Neupower is with us on It's Your Turn today. the president of Butler County Community College, and we're also joined by Jess Matnock, executive director of communications and marketing. Summer is just around the corner. Butler County Community College has had a wonderful program for kids in the summer for many, many years. Is that going to come down again this year, Jess? Are you for Kids on Campus, as it was called?
Yep. So Kids on Campus is a summer enrichment program. It's for grades K through 12, and there is an open house on Tuesday, May 22nd at 5 o'clock, and that is in the lobby outside of the Suck Up Theater. That's where potential students, their parents can come and tour the facility, learn about the different camps, the different areas of camps in terms of subjects for kids,
mm-hmm.
And then even register for those camps at that event. And they start June 18th. The camps run Monday through Thursday, and they're at BC3 main campus.
So that open house Tuesday, May 22nd, that would be a week from this coming Tuesday. I can't believe how fast May is flying.
Oh, it's flying,
wow.
Yeah.
A week from this coming Tuesday. Do you have to pre-register for that or anything?
You do. I mean, you have to register before.
No, I mean to go to the open house.
Oh, for the open house. There's an RSVP form on the website, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not required, I mean, if you just decided to swing by, that would be no problem and welcomed.
It's been a wonderful program. I know I wish when I was that age I'd have had something to do in the summertime. This is not just busy work. This is fantastic educational opportunity.
The camps are really fun. They're STEM-related topics, cooking, art, theater. There's just a variety of things. There's 96 camps, so
it's
really a lot of variety.
Plus, you get that cachet of being on campus.
Oh,
you know, when you're a kid, that's...
That
could be the cock of the walk.
Absolutely. And what another great example of the community's college.
Yes.
Friday is the Butler prom. As many people as we can get on the Oak Hill, we just think that it scores dividends. And maybe not in the traditional way that people might think. Yeah, it'd be great if someone who goes to the Butler prom is undecided and sees our beautiful campus and enrolls in BC3, sure, that would be great. But it demonstrates that local connection that I talked about earlier. We always talk about being the community's college. So here it is. We've talked about a program for K through 12. We've talked about a prom. We've talked about an 80-year-old graduate, continuing ed classes, credit classes, what have you. That diversity, that strength, is really playing well nowadays, and we're just so proud to serve in that capacity.
Mm-hmm. And there are other areas, too. The Musical Theater Guild utilizes Suck Up Theater, usually for at least one of their performances each year, to mount a major musical, and other performances there as well, in addition to the Performing Arts Series that's sponsored by the college. The annual employee recognition dinner was held a couple of weeks back, right? Late April?
Yeah, it was. And we honored employees who have been working for the college for 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, and 50 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Natalie Kitsko, who works in our records and registration office, is celebrating 50 years of employment at BC3, and she was in our first graduating class.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
That's like at a wedding reception, you know, where they have the married couples on the floor and they say, okay, everybody married for less than 5 years.
Yeah.
10 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
A 50-year employee, that's incredible. Natalie Kitsko.
And an alumni.
Yeah.
We're actually inviting all of the first graduating class to this year's commencement ceremony. There's going to be a little reception for them, and we'll point them out during the ceremony and just acknowledge them for being there.
And we didn't realize, but Natalie brought forward a little bit of a controversy. She said that she was a work-study student back when the college opened for 2 years before her degree. So Natalie feels that it should be 52 years and not 50. And Jessica pointed that out, and then for closing remarks, I gave a statement, you know, by the power vested in me by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the Board of Trustees, I hereby award Natalie Kitsko an additional 2 years of employment. And that received a round of applause. So it was a great night. The retirees come back, and they just all look so good and refreshed. And we recognize these great team players who dedicate their professional lives to making BC3 what it is. And again, a very special evening.
It's not just their years of service, too. We have above and beyond award. So we give there is an individual award and a group award.
Yeah.
So we're able to recognize those individuals who have gone above and beyond in the past year.
Work study, that was back in the day, back when the college was getting underway. This is someone who was actually, while they were going to school, they were doing like some part-time work at the college.
And we still have that as a matter.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Actually, that's one of the changes. So in our strategic enrollment management, normally, let's say, Dave, that you enroll as a student. And once you enroll for classes, the old model was, here are the work studies available. We're taking a page out of the privates now. If you apply to BC3, we figure out your need on federal, state, if you can qualify for need-based scholarships, if you can work for work study, and we give you the figure up front as you are making your decision-making. Here's what you'll get going to BC3. You understand, that's a shift in the model. You know, the model before was you enroll, and then you figure out what your aid and what your work study or scholarships are. And again, we're thinking that that has a big correlation to our enrollment being higher. So how often will you hear someone, we hear this with our parents, well, my son or daughter is getting a scholarship to go to whatever private institution. Well, yeah, they're getting a scholarship, but what the privates do is they take your state, your federal, and some of these scholarships. They go up front. They take that away from what the tuition would be, and then here's what's left over. And just the psychology of that with our already low tuition, that's what we're doing. And people are amazed to see, frankly, that they have money that's left over for books, for daycare, for transportation. So just shifting that in a more proactive way, and as far as we know, I'm working with a couple of consultants, we may be the only community college that is doing such a thing, but it has shifted the psychology.
So work-study opportunities would be things, I'm not familiar with this, things like office work, maybe working in the college bookstore or something like that, library, I don't know.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly what it is.
Different offices, could be financial aid, could be business office, bookstore. David Usman's run the Center for Economic Education. We've had work-study students working with him. It's really no different than the graduate assistantship that I had back in the day at Clarion. You put this on your resume that you work in the finance office. You get the letter of recommendation on the back end. You get money coming in that can help offset your college expense. It's a great program.
You mentioned Dr. Neupower earlier in our conversation today about BC3 being the community's college. I like that phrase. It's just a little bit of a twist, but it says a lot. There's a new program, I guess it's getting started soon, where you're going to offer a truck driving prep class or something like that. I'm not quite sure that I understand, but obviously this would be, in many cases, non-traditional students who wanted to start a career as a truck driver, and I understand there's a tremendous need, and there will be for some years. This would be a very potentially lucrative career.
Absolutely. So we're launching a CDL prep training class. CDL is commercial driver's license.
Which, of course, you need if you're going to be a truck driver.
Yeah. Right. And there's a shortage of 900,000 truckers nationwide. That's been reported National Public Radio. So, I mean, we're going to be offering these classes that essentially are a prep to earn a permit and also to qualify you to take classes to eventually get your license. Mm-hmm. And there are programs that are offered. The Newcastle School of Trades offers a commercial driver's license program, but it's just the very first step that you would want to take in getting your CDL and securing employment.
I think it's a great idea. It's, you know, like practicing for your graduate entrance exams or something like that, you know. I didn't realize that it was even possible to do that. And I didn't realize that you had to take classes to get a CDL either. I thought you, you know, got in a truck with a state trooper and, you know, like getting a driver's license.
No, you have to get a learner's permit first, and then, yeah, that's what this class will prep you for, and that's through PennDOT, so you'll qualify for advanced programming to then get your license. So, yeah, it's similar to you know, the process that you have to go through for a driver's license.
And it could be a testing out, a weeding out process.
Yeah.
I'm always keen on those where someone who thinks that that might be a career for them and then I think, well, maybe not. Maybe this isn't for me, but you wouldn't be committed to a great expense or to a great time that would go down the drain if you decided that you didn't want to do that. So
exactly.
And that is such a big shift. So back in the day, my father, relatives, all steel workers, and my parents wanted to send both my brother and I to college to get a degree because the college degree would lead us to a better life, a different career path. And while I would still make that argument, there are other opportunities out there where you don't need the bachelor's degree, where you have the associates, you have the certificate, you get the training. That goes back to that diversity we have in our offerings. And whether it be the roustabout training from many years ago, floor hand welding, or something like this, we're giving individuals the opportunity to get the skills, to pass the certification, to go out and make really good money at excellent jobs that are needed right now.
Mm-hmm. The community's college, yeah. I think we have one final break to take, do we not? We need to check midday lottery numbers, so we'll do that. And I want to tell you, just a reminder, with the spring cleaning time here, about the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart. This is a wonderful opportunity to donate unwanted or unneeded items and to help fund the good works of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, because through the operation of their thrift store, every penny of the proceeds from that stays in Butler County, and it helps to fund their food bank and their client aid program. So think about it if you're doing spring cleaning, you know, cleaning out the hall closet or the spare bedroom or the garage or whatever. Clothing, shoes, miscellaneous items, furniture. You can donate all of that to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. The thrift store is located in the Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. They're open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 7 p.m. We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. It's a wonderful thought, and that's what they like to say at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 0303. The pick 3, 908. The pick 4, 5120. The pick 5, 87566. Wild ball for each of those is 5. The treasure hunt is 1, 7, 22, 23, 30. And the estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $10,000.
Talking with Dr. Nick Neupower, president of Butler County Community College, and Jess Matnock, the executive director of communications and marketing. We are near the end. I don't know. Maybe we are at the end of the spring sports season already. Exam week has come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
Commencement looms within the next few days. Are the spring sports pretty well wrapped up?
Yeah.
Did we do well?
Well, we wanted to share that the Pioneer softball team, they won their third softball title in a row with the WPCC. That was in April, at the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Garrett College, and our first-year softball coach, his name's Dan Beebe. He was named the Coach of the Year. So we were excited for our Pioneer softball team.
And they beat Garrett College for the championship.
Yeah, yep. So Garrett out of Maryland.
I was gonna say, it's a Maryland school, isn't it?
Deep Creek area. Smaller community college, but generally are very good athletics. And I believe that they may even offer some athletic scholarships. And we do not at BC3. So that's a significant win.
Mm-hmm. Nice to see women's sports taking off. Those of you listeners who can remember before Title IX, when women hardly had a chance to participate in sports at the high school level, let alone at the collegiate level. Mm-hmm. And BC3's had a lot of success in their women's sports programs. So with that wrapping up, the I know that the Performing Arts Series is also wrapping up with the end of the spring semester. They've got one more event, and it's this weekend.
Yeah, it's Saturday, May 12th. The Pittsburgh Philharmonic is going to have their last performance of the season. And they're also going to honor their young composer. So at that event. So that'll be at the Suck Up Theater.
Beethoven Concerto on the program, and also one of my favorite pieces, Scheherazade, by the great Russian composer Rimsky-Korsakov. And you don't get a chance to hear that, see that, and hear that played live very often. I've pretty much worn out my CD of so that's coming up this Saturday evening at Suck Up Theater, and that'll wrap up the Performing Arts. Boy, we're tying the ribbon on all the the whole school year here now. Huh?
Everything's really wrapping up.
Yeah. We're looking forward to a good summer. We've been running hard, very hard, and we've had some. You know, we're also close at the college, and we've had some personal tragedy, individual tragedy, a lot of losses just recently. And I mentioned to the trustees, you know, we're still continuing to do a great job. Yes, administrators work year-round. And frankly, I think many of our faculty members do also with teaching summer classes. But it is a nice period. It's a slower pace. Generally, people don't take vacation throughout the academic year. So we have lots of vacation. And quite frankly, we need a little bit of a rest. So we're looking forward to a good summer.
You have one more open house, is that right?
We do, and that's tonight. So we have the nurses pinning tonight.
That's right.
Wow.
We have our final open house at BC3 at Cranberry tonight. Summer classes start on Monday. Graduation is Wednesday. We really are super busy. And we had an open house at every one of our locations, and BC3 at Cranberry is the final.
Mm-hmm. So that's this evening.
It's tonight at 6 o'clock.
Yeah. And the pinning ceremony, which is a wonderful thing for the nurses. And there's great news there with the new facility and now about ready to roll. Do you have any timetable on that construction?
Looking about three years, and we need every bit of it. We still have some money that that we need to raise or partner with some existing entities. So we'll need every bit of 3 years. But as you know, 3 years will be here before you know it.
That'll lead to a significant increase, I would imagine, in the number of nursing students that are able to be accepted. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's another career that there's great opportunities at, great need for nurses around the country. Mm-hmm. Well, we thank Dr. Nick Neupower and Jess Matnock for being with us here today. Don't forget, Saturday, it's Stamp Out Hunger Day. So leave out non-perishables for your letter carrier to pick up. We had the postmaster of the Butler Post Office, Matt Kucinich with us yesterday, along with Jack Hutchinson giving us the details on that. A quick program note for tomorrow. Among our guests will be Rachel Slade. I'm very interested in talking to her. She's a woman who lives in Portland, Maine. She's lived along the Atlantic coast all of her life. And she became interested in researching the tragedy of the El Faro cargo ship, which went down fully loaded in the Bermuda Triangle 2-3 years ago, sailed into a hurricane. It's very sad. There were 35, I think, people who lost their lives. The question that bothered her, how in today's day and age, with our advanced radar, our advanced radio communication, GPS, how could a huge cargo ship sail into a hurricane, which is what happened? So I'm anxious to talk to her. It's a true story. It's sad, but it's fascinating and intriguing. And Rachel Slade has researched that quite a bit.
So that'll be among our guests on tomorrow's program. We have no Pirate baseball tonight because the Pirates have a day off. But tomorrow night, we've got them against the Giants down at PNC Park. I'm Dave Malarkey. Join us tomorrow, 12:30, for the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 in Butler.
It's up-to-the-minute local, national, and world news from WISR Butler, Pennsylvania, and the CBS Radio News Network.
Butler County wakes up with Dave weekdays from 5:30 to 9 on WISR 680 AM Butler.